Welcome to this Yahoo Finance special presentation of Retail Revolution. I'm Julie Hyman, host of our 9 to 11 a.m. programming here on Yahoo Finance Live. Over the next half hour, we're going to speak to executives and influencers who are on the front lines of what has been an exceptionally wild year in the stock market, particularly for retail investors. Join us as we explore how it all began from Reddit all the way to Wall Street. This is Retail Revolution. Now, we've got some stats that I want to share with you that have to do with some observations as I've been covering this throughout the year and kind of where we are now. As we know, this whole meme stock retail interest in the market really spiked earlier this year, but there has been some sustainability, even as we've seen some of these stocks be somewhat volatile. First of all, there's a basket of the 41 most favored stocks by retail investors. It's tracked by Bloomberg, and they've calculated that 9.21% of volume this year overall has been in these 41 stocks. It's waned over the course of the year, going closer to 5%, but still a substantial chunk of the overall volume. That's one of the things that's caught my eye. Secondly, we have seen an explosion in retail brokerage accounts. Fidelity, the retail brokerage giant, not just retail, but also institutional, but its retail accounts in particular were up 23% in the third quarter to nearly 31 million accounts. 44% of the new accounts that were opened by people ages 18 to 35. And a lot of these retail investors have now gotten into the options market as well. They're not just outright buying and selling stocks. They're active in options as well. Daily options volume up 35% year to date through November to a daily average of 39 million. About a quarter of that is retail. So let's dive right in with a company that has definitely gotten some attention from retail investors. It's a marijuana company based in Canada called Sundial Growers that has a cannabis business as well as an investment business. Zachary George, the CEO of Sundial Growers, joins me now. And Zachary, you guys, like a lot of the other so-called meme stocks, for lack of a better word, you caught the attention of retail investors really earlier this year. You saw a spike in your stock. Since then, there have been other sorts of spikes here and there as you've gotten the attention of retail investors. But let's take a step back, first of all, and talk about your business, right? So you guys are in the marijuana business. You operate in Canada. What are you looking for in terms of your growth growth trajectory going into 2022? What do you want investors to know?
Thanks, Julie. Thanks for having me on the show. So we're effectively, we should be looked at as a three-year-old startup in the cannabis industry. We're a Canadian domiciled corporation with a NASDAQ listing, and the retail interest in Sundial and in our shares likely would not be there without that NASDAQ listing. It's a key feature we can talk about. But our business is integrated. So we have what is the largest pure indoor cultivation facility, which is located in Olds, Alberta. And in July of this year, we just acquired what is the largest individual retail network, which is a combination of both corporate and franchise locations. And we have about 113 locations across Canada today. And then the second pillar of our strategy away from our core cannabis operations is really focused on our investment activities. And we launched a joint venture with alternative investment partners in Calgary, focused on capital deployment into the cannabis sector more broadly. And we've built a credit portfolio with significant U.S. exposure that is compliant and non-plant touching. That's over $300 million in size.
And Zach, the Canadian cannabis business has been pretty wild since the inception, right? There were a lot of hopes placed on it. There was somewhat of a rocky rollout in terms of regulation, in terms of getting stores open and getting the industry up and running initially. There's a lot of competition there. Where are we in terms of the life cycle, in terms of the stability of the industry in Canada?
I would say we're in the first or second inning of a true distress cycle. So you're absolutely right in terms of the factors you're referencing, but we saw a massive bubble emerge in the days running up to legalization. We're now 3 years into Canadian legalization. And this industry has been plagued by poor capital allocation, oversupply, both in terms of flower as well as licensing itself. And when you combine that with a certain amount of regulatory dysfunction, which is very, very idiosyncratic to the Canadian industry, you sort of get what we have today, where there are many companies that are failing to reach profitability. And we see 2022 as a year that's going to be somewhat of a reckoning in the space, where you're going to see attrition, some consolidation, and quite a bit of bloodshed as well.
And speaking of idiosyncrasies, we have that here south of the border as well, in terms of obviously state by state, the rules differ. There are some hopes riding on national legalization, but that has not materialized. You talked about your investments in the U.S., but obviously there are regulatory hurdles for cross-border commerce as well. Are there plans, though, for you guys to get involved in a more concrete fashion in the U.S.? What would need to change from a regulatory perspective?
So without a federally legal backdrop, we are not going to be engaged in any plant-touching activities in the U.S. We're big believers in earning the right to take risk, and we are working hard every day to build what we believe could be a dominant business in the Canadian landscape. And if we're successful with that objective, we think that a lot of doors will open up. But for the time being, we're not chasing opportunities internationally on the operations side. We're really focused on building a solid and profitable, sustainable model in Canada. But the opportunity in terms of capital deployment was really too interesting to ignore. And so we've been able to invest in secured and structured credit on a compliant basis, where we're not engaged in plant touching activities, but we're able to partner with some of the highest quality operators in the U.S. to help them fund their growth and other M&A aspirations.
So, Zach, you guys report having 2.5 million individual shareholders. Now, that is an incredible number. That's from back in July. Is that the latest data that you have? And why do you think that Sundial is one of the companies that caught retail investors' attention?
It's a great question, and we did disclose that in connection with our AGM. So that's the latest data we have. So I'd say it's about 2.5 million. Interestingly, there are over 1 million accounts with Robinhood specifically that hold Sundial shares. So the retail participation and really dominance in terms of our shareholder register is very real.
And how have you courted? I was just curious how you've courted. Have you courted them specifically as well, kind of since that happened? I mean, we looked at your stock chart. We saw that spike. We've seen the shares come down. Do you feel like you have to sort of catch the interest again? Are there are benefits, obviously, from a capital perspective to having the stock go up?
It's a great question, Julie. The way I would explain this is that, no, we did not seek this. We did not court this activity. You know, I'm actually a CEO that's largely off the grid when it comes to various social media channels. So this has been a very unique experience, to say the least. But what I would say is, if you look at the life cycle and history of Sundial, we were in August 2019 IPO. The IPO process went very poorly. The business was focused internationally and had a significant cash burn rate, requiring it to be restructured. And I was brought in 2020. To lead that restructuring. So I've been in the seat almost 2 years at this point. But in 2020, we had to take some aggressive measures, including orchestrating debt for equity swaps, and also raised a significant amount of equity capital. And that dilution, which was required in order to save the business, actually drove more liquidity. So the way that I think about this retail interest, number one, I think it's important to note that the support that we've had from our retail investors is absolutely an essential ingredient in the survival and success of the business thus far. It's enabled us to survive some less than ideal decision making, and we've pivoted and our strategy has evolved significantly to this two pillar strategy that I mentioned previously. But I think about it in terms of interest and access. And so if you look across the monthly reports, for example, I use Robinhood as an example because it's a great indication and barometer for retail interest. But you can see very clearly that when you look at the top 10 securities held within Robinhood accounts, from time to time, there's been a reasonably strong presence of cannabis related equities. So you have a demographic, however you want to call her that, that is enamored of cannabis generally. And so there you have the interest, which is also driven by both the volatility and trading liquidity of the shares themselves. And then access is also critical as well. And when you compare us to other companies, you know, you see a lot of US MSOs, for example, that cannot access US listings. And so they are listed either on the CSE or the TSX, for example. We chose in early days prior to my arrival to list on NASDAQ. If we hadn't done that, our path and this story would be very different, and I probably wouldn't be here today. But on the backs of that interest, we were able to raise over $1 billion Canadian, which enabled us to create a debt-free balance sheet and build out a very attractive investment portfolio, support our operations, and we're still sitting on north of $500 million in cash. So very well positioned to take advantage of distress in the sector.
Yes, definitely. So really great to catch up with you, Zach. Hope to have you on again to talk about where you are, you know, a month, 2 months, 3 months from now. Zach George is Sundial Grower CEO. Thanks again for being here, Zach. Coming up next, no fee, no problem. In fact, no problem at all. How zero commission brokers helped spark the retail trading revolution. We'll be right back.
It sort of signifies the massive shift that we've seen in terms of who the investor is. You know, the retail investor is very much loud and strong in this market.
It really was a momentous year. And you have to start with the meme trade.
These are really new investors to the market that have joined the market because of the frenzy we saw in January. 10 million new brokerage accounts were opened in the first half of this year.
Mish, what do you make of what's happened this year? I find it simply incredible. And also encouraging at the same time.
For now, I've kept on accumulating shares, and I will be doing so in the future if I have any money left.
You've had a whole bunch of retail traders that have made a whole bunch of money over the past 2 weeks in GameStop and now AMC. Where do they go next?
Special presentation, Retail Revolution. Let's bring in Yahoo Finance's Jared Blickery, who watches all the charts and all the stats for us. And Jared, as we saw from those little sound bites you were showing before the break, you were definitely part of this ride along with us watching all of this unfold this year. What are some of the things from the past year that really stand out to you?
Well, Well, Miles stood out to me. He was in that video too. good to see him. But I want to go to the Wi-Fi Interactive. What stands out to me is we all know what a meme stock is now because we kind of know it when we see it. It just pops out of the blue. We did try to define this early, and we borrowed some of these bullet points from Bloomberg, I believe. But this was your construction, Julie, towards the beginning of the year. So what makes a stock a meme or a meme stock? Well, first, low share price. And not all of this applies anymore because a lot of these stocks, they have high share prices now. Market cap under $10 billion, short float over 15%, consumer-facing, familiar name. All of that's well and good, but I'm not sure it applies anymore because, like I said, a lot of these companies are pretty big. And if we go to our heat map here of our meme stocks, now this is, let me set this to market cap. And we're going to go to an internet. There we go. And we can see, for instance, AMC is now a $12 billion stock. Let's see. GameStop is $10.5 billion. Hertz is an $11 billion stock. This is a company that went bankrupt in May of 2000. Let me just put a max chart on here. Let's see where this brings us. So they re-IPO. They relisted, looks like about midway through the year. But before that, it had been an absolute disaster. And guess what? Hertz is issuing a buyback notice for $2 billion. Kind of shows you where the market has gone. And of course, Liz Warren is pushing against that and everything. But this speaks as to the way a lot of these companies have simply changed the capital structure of their market, of their fundraising abilities. Now, you take a look at GameStop, for instance. This is MaxView. Let me just dial this back to a two-year view. And let's remember, Wall Street Bets was something, this was a phenomenon, not a worldwide, not a U.S. phenomenon, but it was a phenomenon last year. Roaring Kitty had a thesis on GameStop, and that thesis worked out. Now, did we expect this to go to, let's see, $350, $360 per share? Probably not. But I think another thing that stands out in these charts, I'm going to put a year-to-date candlestick chart on here, is just the incredible bouts of volatility. And there's been more than one. Right now, this is the late January, early February period. Here we have in March. Here we have in June. And to a lesser extent, we've seen some rises here, but nothing of the magnitude of order that we saw before. Now, I want to bring this particular stock, this is GameStop, this chart back to a three-month view, and we see some negative price action here. That is indeed the place, the point where we're seeing this. Now, if I take this to a one-month view and sort by performance, we can see a lot of these stocks under a tremendous amount of pressure, and then I switch to a year-to-date view. If you were in from the beginning of the year, now some of these stocks are dogs. They're down more than 90%, but a lot of these are winners. AMC up almost 1,000%, GameStop up over 600%, Julie.
Yeah, so it's definitely differentiated, which is quite interesting here as we arrive at this point in the year. Jared, stick around because let's talk about the vehicle by which people were getting into these stocks. And of course, there were a number of options, but one of them was Charles Schwab. Now, Schwab was among the first mainstream brokerage firms to drop its commission fee. That happened back of October of 2019. And then really we saw a lot of the other discount brokerage and online stock brokerages to follow suit. Joining us now is Jonathan Craig. He's head of investor services at Charles Schwab. Jonathan, thanks for being here. Jared's going to stick around as well. So talk to me about that point in time, right, which obviously preceded all of this action that we had this year. But do you think that was a real turning point in the industry? And how did it pave the way for what happened in early 2021?
Sure. Well, first, thanks, Julie, for having me. It is such an exciting time, as you point out, for the retail investor. I do think in many ways, there were probably a couple of turning points. I think certainly the commission move we made in 2019, after which much of the rest of the industry followed, did remove a lot of cost friction from the equation. And probably not surprising, we have a 50-year history of reducing costs on behalf of investors. So this was the next logical decision. I think it was a couple other things. There's been so many digital innovations and other innovations that just make investing easier than ever. And then, of course, fractional trading has become a lot more prevalent. And I think it really probably is that combination of fractional trading, being able to buy a slice of an individual position, removing the cost friction almost entirely, and just digital innovations and mobile enhancements that collectively has really helped lead to the rise of the retail investor. And then, of course, the pandemic gave people a little bit more time to engage with the markets.
And Jonathan, with trillions of retail investor dollars under management, I expect that you have a ground floor view of what's going on in this space. And I've been asking this question to a number of guests in this theme, which is how sticky are these retail customers? Because some of them I would think are maybe just fly by night. You know, they wanted a taste of the action. It wasn't for them. But are you seeing a significant number of new investors, new accounts in the space, maintaining not only their accounts, but also some of their investment activity as well?
Sure. Yeah. No, I'm glad you asked that question, because I think, you know, there's a lot of people, I think, have speculated that that many folks who entered the market during the pandemic were maybe, you know, speculative short-term risk takers. And you know, in our data, at least the clients who've come to Schwab, that's not really what we've seen. You know, we did a really comprehensive study of individuals who entered, became first-time investors during the pandemic. And, you know, we found a couple of things. Maybe not surprisingly, most were younger, more than half were millennials or younger. There were actually, though, a mix of some were buy and hold investors, about 56% buy and hold and 44% more trader-centric. They tended to be pretty optimistic, which is not surprising. Many of them opened accounts for you know, pretty straightforward reasons. Some wanted a new source of income, some an emergency fund, and some were even thinking about retirement. And maybe finally, they're a bit self-directed, as you might expect, but also not purely self-directed. I think many, from what we saw, many were looking for also help and advice just on their terms when they want it. So, you know, I would say in our experience, certainly we've attracted many, many younger clients. Over half of our new clients are less than 40. But they, generally speaking, do have a long-term view and are looking for help.
Jonathan, there was sort of this conventional wisdom that a lot of the money that poured in the market was coming straight from the government, right? People were getting their stimulus checks and they were opening a brokerage account. Have you really seen those openings slow down, though? Is that borne out by what you're seeing?
Well, I mean, if you look at our metrics, I think, as I said, over a million new accounts, even over the past several quarters. So it's not simply about government money coming to the market. I think it's a confluence of things. But we continue to see good numbers, strong numbers, certainly very elevated relative to pre-pandemic. Not the Q1 meme stock numbers, but that was, I think, a unique time. But again, our numbers remain elevated, and we do expect that to continue. I think largely because of the reasons I said, which is cost coming down materially, fractional capability, which is so important for first-time investors. And again, it's just never been easier to open an account and start investing. So, you know, I think for us, what we think a lot about is how do we give those new investors the tools and the guidance and the insights to be successful over the long term. You know, investing, we certainly believe investing should be fun, but it's not a game. And I think we see the difference.
Well, hopefully these folks will do okay if we see some more rockiness in the market. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. Jonathan Craig is Charles Schwab, head of investor services. And of course, our own Jared Blickery offering his perspective as well. Coming up next, speaking of perspective, we're going to get one from a stock market influencer. That's coming up next. Matt Kors will join us.
Moon Gang.
Hello, hello, hello. We are getting into that holiday Christmas spirit. Things are going a little bit crazy in pre-market, and it has all to do with inflation. The consumer price index report just came out, and we're at high values. We are at high values. I'm talking, look at Snoop Dogg and then think higher.
That was stock market influencer Matt Kors starting his show last Friday on YouTube. Kors' subscribers have gone from about 10,000 before the meme stock retail revolution to more than 370,000 now. And Matt joins me now. Love that you were covering CPI. That's what we were covering too, of course, Matt. So we're all, same page. I don't. Maybe I'll start. I'll begin to start my show that way. Also with the I like that. So this obviously didn't. You weren't just going through this as a spectator. You were in it in terms of the meme stock revolution. What has this year been like for you? I mean, you were just telling me during the break you quit your job back in February to do this full time. So how did that happen? How did this catch fire?
Yeah, definitely. Like we were a little bit talking about there, the definition of life changing. I mean, for me before this, I was coding. I had that classic 9-to-5 job. And with it, it got to an opportunity that I had so much passion and interest of what was going on and tracking the story of it started with GameStop. And then it very quickly, it started including AMC. And then from there, it's just become an entire additional beast of like, we're talking about market manipulation. We're talking about market structure. It's just so cool to experience it firsthand. For me, I feel fortunate to be at the age that I am and so quickly find what I'm passionate about. But I mean, this stuff has just been nuts. I mean, it started off with the beginning of the year. People were cooped up still because of the pandemic. They heard about GameStop. It started with Roaring Kitty, Keith Gill, and then that started to go crazy. They took away the buy button. And then once again, similar to the veins of Occupy Wall Street, people started to ask like very legitimate and serious questions. And then from there, it started to remind people of 2008, 2009, where people, let's say in a general sense, there is that underlying feeling that people in Wall Street get away with a lot and no one's really like asking them the right questions. And I think this is just kind of a rebirth. And that's what led to the cultural wildfire that is now identified as the apes.
Right. I mean, and it feels like people wanted a piece, right? That they want a piece of the action. That was part of it. How sustainable do you think this is? How sustainable has it been through this year? And do you think, how much do you think it's going to continue?
So the sustainability of this group, I think, is actually immense. I mean, month over month, starting in February, people thought the apes were going to go away. I mean, that was commonly reported, but right here, a lot of people are still paying attention day in and day out. I mean, most recently, it was just reported, I think 182 high-level congressional staffers have not been properly reporting their personal stock trades. And it's millions of people across the globe who are continuing to dig and dig and dig. And in terms of sustainability for the group, fighting for market transparency and fairness, I find it very, very difficult to bet against that going away anytime soon. I think it is 100% here to stay.
Matt Kors, I wish I could talk to you for much longer. Unfortunately, we have to leave it there, but I want to have you back. Come on my show also in the mornings, and we can talk more about all of this. Matt Kors, stock market influencer, thanks for being here today. Really appreciate it. All right, that does it for Retail Revolution on this Monday, December 13th. Thanks for being here. Obviously, we're going to keep following this trend because as we've been hearing from all of our guests today, it is not going anywhere. I'm Julie Hyman. This is Yahoo Finance.